The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch all of the best of the bigs all season long on ESPN Plus, with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. Ready to play ball? The Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney gives you an insider's perspective Monday through Friday with the biggest names, stories, and analysis in the sport. Follow the Baseball Tonight podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Monday afternoon. You'll be hearing this Tuesday when the two guys I've got on have a very interesting story coming out we're going to talk about. But first, let me introduce them. Joining us from Naples, Florida, is Bobby Marks, Front Office Insider. How's it going, Bobby?
Hello, Brian. How are you?
Good. And joining us from the opposite side of the country, diagonal across in Seattle, Washington area, is Kevin the Machine Pelton. Hey, Pelton.
Yeah, Bobby has chosen to be about as far as possible away from me within the contiguous United States.
You know what I call Naples, Florida? I call it the Witness Protection Program of the United States. If you do not want to be found, you move to the southwest corner of Florida.
All right. So, Bobby, over the weekend, we have a Drew Holiday extension, which came in at a big number. Although maybe once you peel away the incentives, maybe not as big as it initially appeared. It was understood that considering everything that the Bucks gave up to get Holiday last winter, that it was likely that they were going to extend him and not let him hit the market. This contract is interesting on several fronts. One, because it ties the Bucks basically into this core for a while, because between Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Giannis, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $530 million guaranteed with incentives that can push it past $550. That's an enormous number for three players. But the other thing is, you know, what it means for the free agent point guard market going forward. But first off, did this contract come in around where you thought it would? What was your reaction when you saw the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, this is what they call a blank check contract, right? It's basically write what number you want, and this is the maximum that Holiday could have gotten based off, you know, the 120% off his $25.1 million. And then he even got the maximum allowed when it comes out to the bonus structures in his contract. And it's, you know, 135 is the guaranteed portion, $5 million and likely, and then another $25 million and unlikely. It's exactly the same contract that he is on right now. When you're talking about bonuses, he's got games played, he's got minutes played, rebounds. There's a ton in there that we don't need to go into. But this was the ultimate leverage play when you give up a bundle of draft picks to go get him, and you do not have cap space in the offseason because of the Giannis Supermax and Middleton and Brooke Lopez. You have really no options outside of retaining Drew Holiday. And it's a huge contract. You know, $135 million guaranteed. He's got a player option on the fourth year. It's actually, there are four teams for next year that will have three players that have $100 million plus guaranteed in salary. Milwaukee, Golden State with Curry, Thompson, and Wiggins. Brooklyn with Harden, Durant, and Kyrie. They have $121 million guaranteed between the three of them. And then the fourth team is Philadelphia with Simmons, Tobias Harris, and Embiid at right at $100 million. So it is a huge, as you said, it's a huge financial commitment. But they knew when they made that trade back in November that this was basically the number that was going to have to come in. And it's interesting, Kevin. It's like, he had, you know, the COVID really impacted him, but he's played exceptionally well over the last, you know, few weeks here.
And they've been really good when he's been on the court. I mean, that was their biggest stumble, was that 5-5 stretch when he was out of the lineup. Their record still isn't what it was the last couple of years, and obviously not quite up there with Brooklyn and Philadelphia in the East, which is going to be very important over this last month plus, because, you know, you don't want to be the team that doesn't, ideally you want to be number one and only have to face one of those other two teams. And then next best, you want to be number two and have home court advantage if you meet the other one in the conference semifinals. So you definitely don't want to be stuck in third where Milwaukee is right now. But, you know, I mean, Holiday on its face, this is someone who's not as accomplished, obviously, as Brooklyn's big three and, you know, some of those other guys in that $100 million combined or multiple players with 30 plus million guaranteed for 2021-22. But in terms of his impact, he's always been right up there. He's had six seasons running where he's been in the top 25 of our real plus minus stat. And that's, I think, again, playing out with the impact we're seeing when he's healthy and on the court for the Bucks.
So when I look at contracts, this is something I've tried to do for a decade plus now, because when you look at contracts, sometimes they look really expensive. And then 3 years later, you're like, what a deal. So here's the way I look at it. And Bobby, you tell me if you think this is reasonable or not. I look at it as, if you had to trade the guy tomorrow, could you trade the guy? Because so often players, their value is based on that contract. You know, Andre Drummond is a good example. Andre Drummond is a player making $29 million who is not that attractive to many teams. But at half of that price, or even, you know, three quarters of that price, that's a totally different conversation. At the minimum, which is what he got from the Lakers, you know, a whole bunch of teams wanted him. So, you know, it's you know, the contract matters, you know. So I look at Holiday. Bobby, could you trade Drew Holiday tomorrow?
I think you can. I think point guards are a premium, especially point guards that, you know, that are two-way players. I think if Drew Holiday was a center, I think that would be a little bit more. I think there's a challenge there, but I think point guards were basically the quarterback of the team. You know, that's how we treat them. And, you know, when it's 31, 33, 35, 38, those are the numbers there. I do believe you can, that number could be traded if he didn't have a trade restriction and Milwaukee made him available. But I look at contracts, it's especially extensions are so hard, because you're basically trying to reward the player from the past and then hedge your bet as far as what the future is going to be, reward him for the future here. And we often see players get rewarded just for the past and not what, you know, their production level is going to stay, you know, at that same level. So that is a challenge. But yeah, I do believe even though he's got $135 million guaranteed after this year, that contract would be movable if they wanted to do that again.
So yeah, the second max contract is always, you know, it's dicey sometimes. Now, not for guys like LeBron or Kevin Durant or what have you. I've talked about this in the podcast before. There's a GM who calls the first max the fun max, because it's, you know, a smaller portion of the cap. Typically the players are getting it when they're 23, 24. So you're getting them in their, you know, in their great portion of their careers. The second max, a lot of times that's when the superstars are looking to move around a little bit. That's when maybe they're a little bit unsettled and a little bit more demanding. And now you're talking about guys who are maybe 29, 30 zone, and they've had some injuries. And or even if they're 28, you're looking at the back end of that contract and maybe paying the guy when he's 33. You're looking at maybe paying him, you know, 40 some million. The second max, which is what this is for Drew Holiday, especially for a borderline all-star player, is always a little bit fraught. Not always, but a lot of times a little bit fraught. But here's what I want to know, guys. The free agent market this summer has pretty much been vanquished by all the extensions that have come this year, from LeBron to Paul George to Giannis and all the way down to Drew Holiday now. But we are going to see a bit of a point guard free agent market. Specifically, Dennis Schroeder, Lonzo Ball, who'll be restricted, and Kyle Lowry. And this number for a point guard, I guess his guarantee average is 31 a year. I guess if he hits all the incentives, which I don't know if we should look at it that way, I guess it would be $40 million a year. But I think it's better to look at the $31 million guaranteed a year. And so this is, you know, one of the reasons why Dennis Schroeder has not signed the 4 years, $84 million that the Lakers have offered in some form, is because he's looking out there and seeing a guy like Drew Holiday, who is a better player, but not dramatically light and night and day, like not in the same realm. And it's why Schroeder, I'm sure, is waiting Pelton. And you know, again, I think if you're the Lakers, it's not unlike the position that the Bucks were in. It's not as extreme because you didn't trade all these picks for him. But if Dennis Schroeder walks on the Lakers and says, I want to go play for the Raptors, or I want to go play for the Knicks or the Heat, they don't have a functional way to replace him. And so his leverage is how difficult he is to replace. So to me, the biggest challenge for a guy like Schroeder, and the same thing, you know, goes for Lonzo, is to find a contract that you can get him, but don't sign a contract where people like me are saying that's an untradeable contract. So Pelton, how do you think this contract, maybe this Holiday contract, affects that free agent market for some of those point guards?
Yeah, I definitely think that your conversation about Schroeder last week on the pod has to be understood in this context, where you do have this older group of point guards. And one person you didn't mention is Chris Paul, who's got that huge player option for 21-22, but could be an interesting choice whether he wants to try to, you know, lock in long term at this point while he's still coming off playing at an all-star level and this great impact that he's made on the Suns this year. So that's probably going to be worth discussing a little further. But you know, outside of Paul and Lowry are guys that those are not long-term solutions for you at point guard. And if you're taking a long-term solutions for you at point guard, it's going to be Schroeder and Lonzo Ball. And that's where I think a couple of things come into play. Number one, how well Schroeder plays in this year's playoffs is really going to go a long way in determining that market and, you know, whether teams see him as an above average starting point guard or just, you know, kind of a decent option at that position. And then, you know, I think the other thing is how willing are the Lakers to spend to bring him back, you know, even if they're not necessarily sold, because of the question you asked is it's important for them to have matching salary. If you want to go out and try and make a trade like they tried to make with Kyle Lowry at the deadline and you don't have Dennis Schroeder in the mix, that's much more difficult. So it's got to be enough to keep him, but not so much that he becomes, you know, you have to give up value to get off him as matching salary in a trade like that. It's a tricky balance to strike. And, you know, especially because of that inability to replace him, our former colleague John Hollinger, now at The Athletic, has termed it the bird rights trap, because you almost feel trapped into re-signing those players. And we saw it last offseason with the Lakers with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and maybe with the Clippers with Marcus Morris as well. And they were able to get very nice deals, as I think you mentioned back then.
KP, don't remind me about the bird rights trap. You know who we can name that after? Gerald Walls.
Well, especially speaking of giving up.
I knew that was on your mind there.
That's true, but you know,
Bobby, you make a trade for a player like that, and you know, you give, I mean, that's a little different because you give up a draft pick, and but you have you're handcuffed that you have to either you make a trade for a player or you have that player that you have what are your options, right? What are your options if you lose him? Then you are basically relying on some of your mid-level exception to go out and sign him. And do you have faith in your scouting department to go? Is there, you know, who else is out there? That's when you get in that overpay part.
Of course, Bobby Weck, when you were with the Nets, you guys signed Chris Humphreys to, I believe it was $10 million contract, with a specific belief that you could trade him. Which you did in the Garnett Paul Pierce deal. So, you know, sometimes you do use the bird rights to your advantage. It's a matter of you had to sign him to a contract that was movable.
Yeah, and he knew when we signed him to that he would probably eventually be traded. I mean, that was part of the deal that he was going to get the before there was the JJ Redick contract. It was a the 1 year balloon payment or 2 years. You know, 2 years, $24 million, whatever. You know, it's a big number that hopefully you can use in a deal. And I think that's where going back to where you need those contracts that are those I call it the sweet spot contracts. You know, those $15 to $17 million players, maybe 18 to 20. When the Celtics ran into that trouble for a while, when they had Hayward, Horford, guys like that. And then there wasn't anybody kind of, I think Marcus Smart was really the only guy there, who had like a $12 million contract. They didn't have any, they had all draft picks with Tatum and Brown were on the rookie contract. You didn't have any of those $13 to $14 million contracts. A great team is in Indiana. Indiana's got what, like six guys that make between 10 and $20 million. So it's important to have those when you need down the road to kind of move in a deal.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. So what did you think about Pelton's, it's the first time I've heard of it or thought about it, the concept that Chris Paul might...
Oh, I agree with Kevin. I think Chris Paul, well, he's an over 38 guy, right? So you're kind of restricted as far as years, length in years. And I think Chris Paul could look at, taking this Phoenix team that's, top three in the West, if they go on a nice little run and they get to a second round or even a conference finals, let's say, he'll hold that over, Robert Sarver's head and said, hey, I want to opt out and I want another, I want three years and maybe my number goes from 41 or to 33, but I have an extra $70 million guaranteed, almost like with Hayward did in Boston going to Charlotte. I think that's certainly a possibility to talk about based on how far this Phoenix team goes.
Especially if he leads them to if they can somehow find their way to the conference finals. I mean, the Suns haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. If he leads them to that, I mean, there would be pressure to retain him. So interesting concept because, the idea of Chris Paul opting out, two, 3 years ago on that, the end of that deal was considered no way. That's why teams have traded him. They don't want to pay him that, that's why the Rockets got rid of him. That's why the Thunder got rid of him. They were like, we don't want to pay him that kind of money for our teams. The Thunder were in a rebuild, but that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Okay. So when this podcast is coming out on Tuesday, you guys have a story. Have we done this story before? Because I don't remember it.
Yeah, that's an annual tradition.
It was
1 year I think we didn't do it that I couldn't find because I was going
back. I think 2012, right, KP? Is that what it goes back to?
Wow. That's how far back.
How fried my brain is! I don't remember.
That's how far back I've been involved with it. I didn't go check whether there were ones.
Tony, let's cut that out. Where I did remember that this is an annual tradition for a decade. Thank you very much. okay, so it's a top 20. Maybe I do remember. I'm just a fool. Top 25 players in the league ranked under the age of 25. So if you're 25, you can't do it. You got to be 24 or younger. This is a particularly interesting group this year because we have some pretty good young players in the league. And the way this worked is Pelton had a vote. Bobby Marks had a vote and Mike Schmitz, our draft analyst, had a vote. So it was not that big of a surprise. And the story you can see at ESPN.com, and I'm sure it'll be on Twitter, either on Bobby or Pelton's feed. You can go look at it. I don't think it's much of a surprise that that Luka was number one and Zion was number two. I think in all three of your rankings that you got, they ranked 1-2. Where things get interesting is onward. LaMelo Ball came in number three, ranked player on the list for most for best player 25 under 25 ahead of guys like Jason Tatum, ahead of guys like Donovan Mitchell, ahead of Ben Simmons, ahead of Devin Booker, ahead of Jaylen Brown. Pelton, you had him up there. You guys both had him up there. You obviously think a lot of where LaMelo is.
Yeah, and the one thing we should make sure to put prominently at the front of this discussion is we're ranking these guys in terms of their future potential, not what they are right now. So, you know, obviously LaMelo Ball is not quite yet at that level of these guys who are already all-stars. But I think there was, as you mentioned, you know, Luka and Zion were pretty clear 1 and 2, the same spots where they were last year. And those guys have the clearest superstar potential. I mean, Luka Doncic already is at that level. Zion is getting there in a hurry. And then after that, there's this group that has been very good in the league at a young age, definitely has the chance to get there. But I think when, you know, we talk about what's the best this player could be, there's a higher upside with LaMelo Ball than some of these other guys because of the fact that he's done what he's done so far as a rookie at such a young age. I don't know if you looked at that same way, Bobby.
I did. I mean, I think it's challenging. This is always one of the hardest articles or rankings to do because it's almost like future power rankings. You're trying to project what the future here. And KP and Mike had LaMelo number 3 overall. I had him, I believe I had him 8 on my, 8 on my list. And which I thought was a good number for
me too. Me too. I mean, like I'm more with you, Bobby, but I also don't analyze it like you guys, other guys do.
But so. The funny thing is, you know, I felt like we were, and I sent an email internally because I had Miles Turner on there, and Kevin reminded me that Miles turned 25. I think like a week ago, and I was like, thank God, because I wanted to give someone else a chance because we've had Miles on there the last couple. It's a major challenge. I mean, I have guys like, you know, CD Bay on there. Jared Allen made the cut. I didn't have him on my, I don't think I had him on my top 25 here. But yeah, I mean, LaMelo is interesting just because, you know, it's a little of both. It's a little bit of both what we saw pre-injury. And then as far as what the future holds, and he's got that star-like power, where some of the other players like, I don't know, Jamal Murray at 13, which is a solid number, but I think Jamal Murray is who Jamal Murray is. I don't know if he can take that another leap there than kind of what he is right now.
Jamal Murray is a guy who pretty consistently, not every night. I mean, consistency and health are two challenges for him, but Jamal Murray affects winning. He changes games to win loss by the stuff that he does. And that's what has impressed me about LaMelo this year is LaMelo has shown at times that he can be the difference maker between winning and losing. That is very rare for a rookie. Very rare. Even the guys who are absolutely the top of their games. I've talked about this in the podcast before, like LeBron and KD, they helped their teams win games as rookies, but they were not the types of players that could take an average team and carry them into the playoffs at that point. And maybe the Hornets wouldn't have made the playoffs. Now they're absolutely wrecked by injuries. Hayward is out for a month. Ball is out for the year. They just had another injury. Who else did they just lose? Oh, Malik Monk is out. Like they're wrecked by injuries now. So we'll never know what they would have been. But I do feel like LaMelo contributes to winning. And that's not something you normally see from a rookie, especially a rookie point guard, Pelton.
Yeah. And to earn a starting spot behind, in front of a backcourt that had been very good for them last season in Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier. So, you know, he had to earn it in some ways and did prove that he could play at that level. And then, you know, Devontae Graham's injury helped clear some space for him in the starting five before his own injury. But, you know, that's part of it is, I mean, I liked LaMelo Ball. I had him as the top prospect in this year's draft, but I figured this was going to be a long-term process with him, that they were right to bring him along slowly because of, you know, the immense leap and level of competition from playing in the Australian NBL last year to playing in the NBA. And because of the fact, in large part because of the fact that his outside shooting has been more efficient than we expected, certainly knew he had the ability to knock down threes and stretch the court, but to do it consistently like he has been a big driver in it. He's been ahead of expectations for me. And again, when you sort of just project out based on, you know, the company that he's keeping in terms of performance as a teenager, those are generally guys who end up, you know, all NBA players, MVP candidates. And you know, that doesn't mean for sure that he's going to get there, but it's encouraging that he's in that group.
So Pelton, you, if I'm not mistaken, unless I'm misreading this, you did not have Anthony Edwards in your top 25.
I did not. I mean, he's very promising in terms of, you know, you see him on the right night. He's already looks dominant with his combination of size, strength, quickness, and shooting ability. You see him on the wrong night, he can still shoot you the Timberwolves out of a game. And, you know, I think that there's still, I need to see him do it in a slightly smaller role with slightly greater efficiency, which hopefully when D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns are both healthy together, as they haven't been at basically any point this season or since that trade, it'll put him in that role and we can see that. But there's a few guys who have just kind of gone the wrong direction from that start, not ever been able to improve their efficiency for me to quite get there with him as a top 25 guy yet.
And Bobby, you did not have Tyrese Halliburton. He looked like he was 26.
I know, and that's my favorite. He's not going to be happy with me. I did not. How I kind of went through the process was I kind of took a group of 60 guys, and I basically tiered them. Luka and Zion were my tier ones, and I just kind of, it was a little bit of a process of elimination. And then when I got to my, I guess it was my tier five guys, you know, that's basically the guys in that 22 to, you know, 25 range. And there was like, I think I had like nine guys that I could, you know, that I picked from or had the option of picking from in there. And he was not on my top 25. He made it in at the last minute because of the Miles Turner age discrepancy that kind of gave him that boost that he moved to, I think he moved to 25 and everybody moved up, but I did not. And you know, it's a process of, as I say, process of elimination. It's just, it's hard. If it's not him, it's going to be somebody else that's going to get squeezed out. It's going to be Colin Sexton or Deontay Murray or Keldon Johnson or one of these. I mean, there are a lot of good 25 under 25 players here.
So Schmitz had him 22, and I think Pelton, you had him maybe 18 or something, 19. So it's interesting. Halliburton's draft thing is it's one of the most interesting things that's happened in the last year, how he slipped all the way to the back part of the lottery. I've watched some film on him, and he has good size. He can play multiple positions, plays both ends of the court, does a lot of things well. But I can see how some teams may have thought that his ceiling wasn't as high as some of the other guys in the draft ahead of him. That doesn't mean that they're right, because you obviously look at the impact that he has made. Not only that, he's also appears to have terrific character and leadership skills, and potentially already showing good signs of community involvement in Sacramento. But I got to say, I mean, I think one day it'll be like a 30 for 30. What happened on Tyrese Halliburton's draft night? But I can kind of see it, Pelton, because he is pretty close right now to 50, 40, 90. And those players are pretty damn hard to find. I think he's got a good chance of doing it early in his career. But I can also see why he's a bit confounding for where to put in there, because I don't know how much he can grow.
And that's one of the things that I think was, you know, as you mentioned, a knock on him in the draft process. And I think that this is a conversation we had on Twitter the other day. I think people overstate sometimes how much we can define that potential, that, you know, there's a lot of guys in the league. I mentioned Nikola Jokic. Like, who would have thought when Jokic was drafted, like, okay, yeah, he can be a very nice reserve, maybe a low-end starter, but his physical limitations are so great, he can never be a high-end player. And now here he is as the favorite for MVP. So I think we kind of overstate our ability to do that. And Halliburton, what he's done so far this season has sort of been an example of that, where even those of us who really liked Halliburton, and I had him, you know, in the same tier on my draft board as Anthony Edwards, I would have taken him number two, probably. I mean, I would have traded down and taken him later, but I would have considered him the second best prospect. But that was based on, okay, he'll be this awesome role player who, you know, contributes in all of these subtle ways. What I didn't expect, again, you know, same as with LaMelo, where he's exceeded my expectations. Number one, how well he shot the ball, and the volume he's been able to get up from three, because that was always the concern. It was kind of a slow release, even though he made a high percentage.
Yeah, he does have a slow release, but yet, at least in the film that I've watched, he can get his shot off. He can create his own shot, you know, in isolation, and you know, when the ball gets kicked out to him, he can get the shot off before the guy closes out. He doesn't get to the line, but he's, you know, he's getting it done at I think 42% as a rookie from three, which is a really great number.
It is. I mean, I looked up this up the other week because Edwards is taking, I think, the third most 3-point attempts per game of any rookie in NBA history. And if you look at that group, it's basically all the guys who shot in the 30s, a lot of them in the low 30s, like Edwards is. And then, oh, hey, here's Halliburton, who's shooting 42%. So that's quite unusual. And then the other aspect where he's just developed dramatically from college is he wasn't much of a pick-and-roll playmaker at Iowa State. You know, didn't run pick-and-roll at all as a freshman, and still not very much as a sophomore, even though he was their go-to guy. And now all of a sudden, he's, you know, this is in the story. I think he's in the top quartile of all NBA pick-and-roll ball handlers in terms of points per chance, according to the Second Spectrum tracking.
Well, I remember talking to Steve Kerr. So Halliburton is shooting 5 threes a game. So he's shooting 42% on 5 threes. He could be shooting more. I remember Steve Kerr, you know, his senior year at Arizona, he shot 57% on 3-pointers on that team that went to the Final Four. I remember asking about it once, and I said, Steve, that is a number that's kind of lost history. I mean, it's one of the, you know, crazy, especially in that time. And he took 5 threes a game, and he made three of them, basically 3 point something out of 5 point something. And I said, Steve, I know this is modern day thinking, but if you're shooting 57% on threes, why were you only taking five of them a game? You know, even as a role player, if I had a guy make 57%, I'm running a couple of more plays. And he said, I shot 57% because I took 5 threes a game. You know, if I'd have taken 9 threes a game, I might have, shot 39% or 42.1%. But I think there's something to be said for that. But in watching, I can understand why teams were conflicted on Halliburton, even though he is, you know, answered so many of the questions. So this was a guy that had a very interesting ranking. Very interesting. Michael Porter Jr., who's had a complex career, obviously has had injuries, had two bouts with COVID. There have been times where Mike Malone in Denver has literally just had to just stop playing him because he just can't play defense, won't get it done, isn't in the right spot, isn't focused. But he has been playing spectacularly, his best basketball since the All-Star break, really. And then they just picked up Aaron Gordon, and they're looking like they could be pretty formidable here heading toward these playoffs. Bobby ranked Michael Porter Jr. as the number three player under 25 years old in the NBA. Pelton, you and Schmitz both ranked him 18th. That is quite a spread. Bobby, why are you so high? I mean, you ranked him ahead of everybody but Zion and Luka on this list.
Yeah, and I almost did a re-rank because I, you know, Kevin and Mike made me double second guess myself as far as when I saw when I was the first to send it in, and then Kevin, and I think Mike sent it in. And
stick to your guns.
I did not move off it. The only guy I added was Halliburton, as I mentioned, but I just look at a little bit of what he did his sophomore year. There were stretches there, and he's on a tear right now. I mean, you look at his last, his numbers in his last 10 games. I mean, 57% from the field, 54 from three, 20 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, they're playing, I think they're 12-3 in their last 15 games here. He started at the three. He's 53% from three. 54%, 58 from the field, and he's averaging 20 and 8. And I mean, I just look at there is so much untapped potential there if he stays healthy. And of course, the defensive liabilities are well known here. The addition of Aaron Gordon certainly helps him. But I guess I drank the Kool-Aid a little bit on Michael Porter Jr., but I just looked, I just put him,
Maybe Pelton and Schmitz are behind on this. You know, I mean, I'm serious. I will say this, a couple of months ago, I was having the conversation about, he's extension eligible after this year. Cause remember he missed his first year coming off the back surgeries. So he's extension eligible. And if I were his agent, I'd be asking for the max, and I didn't know what Denver was going to do. Now I think he's absolutely asking for the max. And Pelton, I think Denver's probably, he keeps this up, you're probably going to have to do it. The fun max might be headed Michael Porter Jr.'s way, which is, going to be a lot of money considering they've got Murray and Jokic on max, and they just inherited Aaron Gordon's contract and probably want to keep him.
So I don't know if this one is going to be the fun max, because the reason I had him lower, I mean, obviously the defensive issues. I think we're well past the point where Michael Malone is going to take him out of the lineup. He's not coming out at this point. He is right. He is set there, pencil him in as long as he's healthy. And that's the other question mark, is always going to be the back and whether that's going to be a long-term issue for him. So, I think that the negotiations this might be comparable to, he's not this established as a player, but I think back to when Brandon Roy was extension eligible, I think at that point a two-time All-Star with the Blazers, had won Rookie of the Year. And there was a report at some point that summer, I recall, that the Blazers weren't offering him the full max, and people in Portland freaked out about it because he was beloved.
That was the point of the report getting out there, was that people would freak out.
Yes, indeed it was. You got to remember, this was coming off the Jail Blazers era, and the team had gone through a dark period in terms of both, obviously the off-court stuff at that point, but then the on-court results, and then Roy was, along with LaMarcus Aldridge and Greg Oden, the one leading them back out of this. And, they eventually gave him, I don't think there was any sort of injury protection in the extension
him. There was some protection, but he got the lion's share of it guaranteed.
Yeah.
He ended up not being able to play his way through it.
Very first season of the extension is when he broke down physically, and they amnestied him after that first season. So the amnesty gave them the ability to get out of that in terms of the cap hit. But that's going to be the tricky balance, is how do you, is it similar to kind of the Joel Embiid extension that, Bobby broke down, I remember, when it first got signed, in terms of, the way that Philadelphia tried to protect themselves, but also, recognize that Embiid, when healthy, was a max player. So maybe that's kind of a template for Porter.
That extension took them, I remember talking, to people in Philly when that got done, that took them 3 months to do that extension. It was probably the most complex protections.
You said Philly, you meant Portland.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I was talking about Embiid. The Embiid extension in Philly, the max, that he had so much language on there where it basically, I think the first year was guaranteed and just had rollovers on back and knee and, everything else in there. Minutes clause in there. But yeah, I could definitely see Denver doing something similar and protecting themselves if it's the back, which has been well known, because remember that Jokic eventually, that, Supermax is going to be coming down the pike here in a few years when he'll be able to sign that. And you've got Murray, you've got Porter, Gordon, who's extension eligible this off season. Eventually you get penalized for drafting well, and that's probably what's going to happen in Denver.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, Feral Sinking Raccoons, you name it. They won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Yeah, so another guy you guys, interesting to me on here. Where did he end up at? Hold on, look at the final ranking. I think you guys all had him in the same spot. Trey Young ended up 16th in this ranking, behind Michael Porter, behind Jamal Murray, behind Brandon Ingram, behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, behind Simmons and Booker, behind De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox actually ranked pretty high on here, ranked 6th, ahead of Simmons and Booker, which maybe we'll talk about in a minute. Trae Young, all you guys ranked him in the mid-teens. Trae Young is extension eligible this summer as well, and I assume his agent, who is he's with Clutch, I assume they will be asking for the max. And considering the way they've built the Hawks kind of around his talents, I don't think there's going to be much of an option there. But I think this ranking reflects some way the league feels about him. He's a spectacular player who is a, you know, excellent shooter at times, but he has games where he, you know, he's off and doesn't contribute. And then he's a liability on defense, which gets the Hawks eaten alive all the time. And this, you know, kind of reflects that. You know, if your franchise player is not in this top 10 or 12, you know, should he be your franchise player if he's under 25? I fully expect him to get the max from the Hawks, but I do think that there is some dispute out there as to where he really truly ranks as a contributing player. Also, he's at times grates on his teammates a little bit by the way he plays. There was a report earlier this year about how he and Jason Collins were a little bit at odds. John Collins, were a little bit at odds, but I think they've gotten past that for now. But Bobby, Trae Young to me is a very he could go either way at this point. He could vault his way and become a huge difference making player, or he could just kind of be one of those guys where he helps you, but he doesn't really contribute to you being a contender.
Yeah. I mean, and for comparison's sake, we had Trae Young last year at number 8. So that's a big drop going out of the top 10 to,
and they're a much better team. It's not like they've gone in the tank.
Yeah. And they are a much better team. I think I look at Trae in the fact that he impacts winning when his ability to get to the free throw line. And there are a lot of games. I mean, I'll give you, you know, the Denver game from last week where, you know, he got to the, you know, he gets to the line 2 times, 3 times. There are some when he's getting to the line 12 or 13 times. And how much does he, you know, I mean, the stats look great, but how much does he actually impact winning, and do players like to play with him? That's kind of how I look at, as a guy that's probably, I mean, maybe there's more to what we're going to see from Trae Young, but it's kind of like what he's come in and, you know, what he's come into the league as is kind of where he's still at.
I mean, I would say, you know, I think it's really that defensive limitation for me that is a big factor here, because if you compare him to some of these other guards on the list, you know, he's ahead of them without question offensively, and I think is likely to stay better than them offensively. But, you know, especially if you're trying to win at the highest levels, somebody who, you know, you have to figure out the matchups at all times. It's going to make it very difficult for Atlanta to play a switching heavy defense at any point in the playoffs. That sort of limits your options. I mean, that's just become, you know, a default option for a lot of teams in the playoffs, and that's always going to be a challenge for him. So, you know, this has been the eternal question about Trae Young since he came into the draft. I remember writing the week of the draft about how I thought he was kind of being undervalued a little bit as an offensive prospect for him to, you know, be what he was doing as a scorer and playmaker at Oklahoma at such a young age, because typically the guys who have become that in the NBA didn't become that until well into their career. They weren't doing it at age 19 and as freshmen in college, but that, you know, I still wasn't sure how high to get him because of that defensive challenge. And we're still in that point. So if you compare him to, you know, the Foxes and the Morants, those guys aren't going to have that same limitation physically, defensively, you know, that is always going to be an issue for them.
So you max him though, right?
Yeah, he'll be like Darren. He'll probably be like Darren Fox, right? I mean, like how Sacramento dealt with that, and you probably just plop a max offer on August 1st, and you kind of just go from there. And then you know, then we get to scrutinize when he's in year two, as far as where he is, and that's how it usually goes. But where's your wiggle room, right? Like, you know, like he's probably looking at all these other guys getting these, you know, the Foxes and the Mitchells and that group, and is probably thinking, well, I am a max like player.
Yeah, I will say that there's a guy that whose opinion I really respect, who when Harden was on the block said to me, you know, Atlanta should offer Trae Young for Harden. Obviously, it wouldn't have just been that, couldn't have done that trade. There would obviously have been more in there. And you know, you think, well, wait a minute, one guy's really young, he's got a decade with the franchise, but I do think there's some concern out there about what kind of a difference making player he can be. Now, you guys mentioned Fox. So De'Aaron Fox ranks sixth on your list. All of you guys ranked him either sixth or seventh. And again, finished ahead of Ben Simmons, ahead of Devin Booker, ahead of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, ahead of Jamal Murray, ahead of Ja Morant, ahead of Trae Young. You guys had him in front of all of these lead guards. He's the, he's really the third, you know, the by the way, I'll go through the top. Luka 1, Zion 2, LaMelo 3, Donovan Mitchell 4, Jason Tatum 5, De'Aaron Fox 6, Ben Simmons 7, Devin Booker 8, Bam Adebayo 9, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander 10. So you had him in front of all of those guards. Now, the guy has just spectacular speed with the ball. He has proven to be an excellent player in the clutch. Why are you guys, you know, Pelton, why so high on De'Aaron Fox? Are you comfortable with him being ahead of these other guys at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I put him there, so I guess I must be. And none of these differences are dramatic. These are guys in similar tiers, which is what makes it such
a conversation. How these rankings work. Everybody you put below him sucks.
So a stat I just looked up, I was actually looking this up for the Michael Porter conversation, is my wins above replacement player metric for the month of March. Michael Porter Jr. is fifth in that group. And De'Aaron Fox is 10th. He seems to kind of be taking the jump right now. And he's also the kind of player, his skill set, you know, the speed he has, but not being a great outside shooter, those kind of players tend to develop later. And that's also part of my thinking of why he's so high on this list, that I think he's still got another couple levels to go, even from where he is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I look at him, I mean, he's kind of where he is coming in his rookie year to where he is now. I mean, he's plus 13 in the points. And I think that number is going to probably, I mean, we might be talking about him, you know, 28 to 29, you know, a year from now. I know that he'll probably be put in that category if this Sacramento team does not get into at least, you know, the play-in. He'll probably be talked about like guys like Booker and LaVine were from a couple years ago. You know, kind of an empty stat type guy, but I looked at him kind of, he got a little bit of both. He got kind of the now and what the future is going to hold. And that's why I put him up there in that top, you know, that top six.
So Pelton, you had some, honorable mention guys you wanted to acknowledge.
Actually, I wanted to specifically point out that there was a couple of guys that none of the three of us put on our list that I thought were interesting.
Okay.
One of them, we talked about Edwards earlier. None of us had James Wiseman on our top 25.
Said that, you know, it's funny with that, Kevin, is that, and I said it to Nick Friedel over the weekend, because, you know, Nick, of course, covers the Warriors, and, you know, Wiseman's been struggling. I said, like, I almost want to wave the white flag on this rookie class here, just based on everything they've gone through. Yeah. And I know LaMelo had played at a good level, and we talked about Haliburton already, but I mean, like, they're basically like swimming in a deep end right now without a life preserver. I think Wiseman's head is spinning. I think the game is almost too fast for him right now. And without, you know, summer league and training camp and, you know, mini camp and everything in between, I want to give these kids the benefit of the, I want to give them a break this year.
I love Wiseman's skill set, and I recognize the same thing. I was saying that at the outset. In fact, one of the reasons why I'm so impressed with LaMelo and why I'm going to vote for him for Rookie of the Year, no matter how many games he played, is because how impressive he was despite all of that. I had low expectations. Pelton, who else? Or what did you think about Wiseman and who else?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a huge Wiseman believer, partially because, I think it's difficult to take centers that high in the draft unless you're very confident that they can be a source of shot creation on offense, which is what maybe separates him from Evan Mobley in this year's draft, who I think is a more legitimate candidate at that position. But I was surprised that neither Mike nor Bobby had him. And the other guy who didn't come up and I was surprised didn't come up at all was Tyler Hero after last year's playoffs.
Neither.
He wasn't on anybody's list.
No.
Yeah. He's just, he's had an injury riddled, COVID riddled, low efficiency year. And he set the, he's a guy of expectations. He set the expectations so high with the way he played in the bubble, even though his numbers are still pretty good. His 3-point shooting has collapsed, but I don't know if that's if you define him as that is yet, but his numbers are still pretty good. I think, there's still a lot there, but, that is interesting. Let me ask you this, Pelton. Bobby, I don't know how much college basketball you watch. I don't watch much at all, but I have been watching some of the tournament. And we're recording this before the championship game. So where does Jalen Suggs and Cade Cunningham, if they were included on this list, would they have a shot at cracking the top 25 at this point, or would you wait? Because I think Jalen Suggs is a pretty damn special player. I haven't seen enough to be able to make any sort of pronouncements. I would never compare myself to anybody who makes this their profession. I don't, but he looks pretty damn special to me.
I've got the receipts on how much I've loved Suggs' game all season. Like, I can remember watching their opening game on Thanksgiving Day and just being blown away because I'd heard a little bit about him, but because there wasn't the typical prospect, McDonald's games or IC players at the Hoop Summit in Portland, like I'd never seen any of these freshmen play. So it was a real eye-opening experience. I think both of them would probably be towards the tail end of the top 25 for me, and only the tail end because there's so much more uncertainty about guys, how they're going to translate before you see them in the NBA. But
I haven't even seen, other than a couple of dunk highlights, I haven't seen Jalen Green play at all with the G League Ignite. So what do I know?
I would have had Jalen Suggs ahead of Colin Sexton. I would have put him in there. We should have had KP. We should have had Austin do that. Our editor. We should have added that little wrinkle in there. And you said you got two wild cards, and they could be college players, or guys who were in the G League. We can add them to this list.
Yeah. Well, he competes so hard defensively, and it's not something you see from young players that often. So, all right. Well, thanks guys for your insight into this. Check out that list on ESPN.com. Thanks. To Tony, our producer, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later this week.